The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks again for being with us for one additional week. We're going to have another great show today. Rod will be calling in as we rally into the end of the quarter. Where do we stand on things today? I'm going to talk about the math of recovery, because when you see something go down, it has to go up by a larger percentage to get back to even. So even though this year's been down, as we've had this rally, we're still not even. Hopefully we'll get Rod's opinion of that. And then also later, when the yield curve inverts, and that means short-term rates are higher than long-term rates, that has typically been an indicator of a coming recession. A lot of times it comes 9 to 24 months later. You never know exactly when it's going to hit. But we want to talk about the whys and why nots this would indicate a recession in the coming months, and what you would need to do if that's a concern to recession-proof your portfolio. All right, let's talk a little bit about news of the week, brought to you by, of course, Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning and the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at kennyblandauctions.com. And Unrivaled Electric, they specialize in generators and solar arrays. Veteran-owned, they want to be your electrician like they are mine. Call them at 812-361-3604. That's Unrivaled Electric. And finally, Lance Like of the Like Law Group. Yes, give yourself the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance of the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And of course, he is one of the most outstanding elder care attorneys in Bloomington. And if you're dealing with that with your family, you definitely need to give Lance a call. We did that with my father-in-law when he was trying to determine how to get on the VA benefits, with which Lance helped us with that. Also how to eventually potentially get on Medicaid, he helped us with that. So it's a wonderful relief when you leave an office like that and know, hey, you have a path and you know exactly what you need to do next. All right, let's talk about the market. You know, we haven't talked much about the bond market, but the bond market's been punched in the mouth. With interest rates jumping, bond values go down. And it's pretty easy to understand. If I'm earning 3% on a 10-year bond and interest rates jump up, and when they jump up, I'm like, okay, hey, I want to sell my bond. Well, my 3% bond is not worth as much as it was because rates are now higher on a 10-year bond. It might be 3.5, it could be 4. When that happens, my 3% bond is not worth as much, so hence my value goes down. For every 1% move in interest rates, you'll see somewhere between a 7 and a 10% decline in the value of your bond 10 years out. Now, if you have a shorter-term bond, the changes in interest rates don't affect you that much because, hey, if I have a 3% bond that was a 10-year bond, you know, 8 years ago, now it's a 2-year bond, that interest rate move's not going to affect the value that much because I'm just, you know, a rock's throw from getting to maturity. But the bond market is huge. In fact, the stock market is just about exactly the same size. As of last week, the U.S. stock market was worth $53.4 trillion in size. You know what? That means we would have to sell over half the stock market just to pay our national debt. That's kind of scary. The U.S. bond market is just under $53 trillion. So they're almost exactly the same size. But of the $53 trillion of bond issuance out there, $22.6 trillion makes up the Treasury debt. That's the largest piece of the U.S. bond market, period. So, anyway, that's where we stand on things. This is the 10th anniversary. You know, there's always been, like, how do these people in Washington get so rich? They go in poor, they come out rich. Well, you know, they have a lot of inside information, and for years they traded on that information or had companies trade on that information, had their brothers trade on that information, and they were making tons of money, and then they would go and do speaking engagements, or they, you know, lobbyists. There's all kinds of icky ways that they were getting rich in Washington. But this next Monday, coming up, is the 10-year anniversary of the signing of the Stock Act, which basically prevented Washington lawmakers from trading stocks based on non-public information they had gathered on Capitol Hill. So that's called the Stock. Of course, it's an acronym. Everything comes out of Washington is an acronym. But it's Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge. That's what the Stock stands for. The law does not provide a criminal penalty for violators, but does impose a monetary fine. Now, here's the catch. No member of Congress has ever been prosecuted under the Stock Act. So good intentions, bad results. Joe Biden's going to release, or he did release, the 2023 budget proposal for the next 12 months. That starts in October of this year. A long-range forecast generated by the White House included a budget estimate for this upcoming year. They say we're going to bring in $4.6 trillion of, we're going to bring in $4.6 trillion, and we're going to spend $6 trillion, resulting in another $1.4 trillion in the deficit. Now, you may hear rhetoric that says we are reducing the deficit. Well, yeah, because last year we had a deficit of like $2.6 trillion, and now this year it's only going to be $1.4 trillion? Come on. That's like, I remember when GE left Bloomington, they said, well, we're losing money. Well, they weren't losing money, they weren't hitting their projected numbers, so therefore they were actually, in their mind, losing. Well, this is no different. I mean, if we spent $2.6 trillion last year over what we brought in this coming year, $1.4, we're still spending way more than we're bringing in, and that's where the problem lies, and that's where the math catches up with all of us. Minutes from the last Fed meeting. Minutes from the Fed meeting that ended in March of 2021, so almost exactly a year ago, they anticipated there would be no interest rate increases until at least 2023. Remember that? Instead, of course, the Fed just increased rates, and they indicated that they plan to potentially implement additional rate hikes at each of the next six Fed meetings scheduled in 2022. Remember back in, I believe it was 16, they talked about raising rates, and then they did just the opposite. They lowered rates after that. So, yeah, take what they say, you know, with some seriousness, but also with a little bit of grain of salt. And then finally, the unemployment rate in the U.S. was 3.5% back in February of 2020, right before everything hit the fan, and was 3.8% in February of 2022. So basically, we're right back to where we were before. But here's the kicker. The number of unemployed Americans was 5.7 million back in 2020 and was 6.3 million in February of 2022. And the number of job openings in February of 2020 was only 6.9 million. And now it's over 11.3 million. They're still, that they're saying, hey, we need people. And, you know, we just hired a new person. She started this week. Seems like a lovely young lady and seems very smart and intelligent. She's going to do a great job. And she was leaving, and I said, please come back tomorrow. She just smiled and said, I'll be back. Although I didn't see her because I didn't really have time to walk around the office like I normally do. But it's hard. So we've come to the conclusion in this environment where it takes sometimes months to find a good candidate and then to get them to come on board, we may just have to always be hiring. Like, hey, we're always looking for someone because we're growing so quickly that, hey, every 6 months we're probably going to need to add somebody. So what do? Do you wait until you need them before you hire them, or do you get ahead of it and start looking for someone now? I always say get great people, pay them like no one else, treat them like kings and queens, and they'll be there forever. And hopefully that's the environment we've created at our shop. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get Hot Rod on the phone. The little rally we had into the end of the quarter, right? Where do we stand on things now? And then obviously the inverted yield curve that's kind of been going back and forth. Usually it indicates a recession is coming sometime in the future. But why and the why nots that this would cause a recession now? We'll get Rod on the phone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Sure, Money with David Hayes. Got Rod Holloway on the phone, of course, the equity portfolio manager down at CFCI, and also a regular caller to the Glass in the Afternoon show on Mondays and Big Show Friday. And Rod, we ended the end of the quarter here today on Thursday, the 31st of March, And we're actually pre-recording it today, so I haven't really took a look at how we set, but we're kind of flat, maybe down slightly. But we made a little progress this month to sort of get back some of the losses earlier in this year. But one thing I need to caution people about is, you know, if you go down, if you lose 10% or something, or 20% in something, it takes more than 20% to get back to even. So the fall down seems much tougher than that crawl back. So even though we've had a little decent run into the end of the quarter, we still have some groundwork to make up. And Rod, I think here we set Q1's behind us. We've got a lot happening in the market and the world. I think both of us believe that we have a good fighting chance to end positive for 2022. Just kind of give us your thoughts on where we stand on things today, and where do you see the rest of this year, or how you see it shaping up and shaking out?
Yeah, so March has been strong, especially here the last 2.5 weeks. Today is a little weak, as you alluded to, not down big numbers by any means, but we are a little bit down today. We were down yesterday on the S&P 500, but that's after, you know, 2 weeks, a very powerful rally. The early part of this week continued that rally, and then we slowed down here. It makes sense because really when you look at it from a chart perspective, you know, we had a pretty big leg down in January. We got a little bit of a bounce right at the end of January into early February, then a fairly steady, slow decline all the way through February, and then boom, in a matter of about 2.5 weeks, we have gotten probably about 3/4 of those losses back. We're most certainly got back everything we gave up in February. We're back up to where we were maybe near the end of January. Matter of fact, we're down through yesterday's close, Wednesday's close of this week. The S&P was down about 3.44% year to date. And I think that puts us probably only about 4.5% off of all-time highs on the S&P, which was hit near the end of the year in 2021. So I don't know that a lot of people realize that we really aren't that far from all-time highs given the weakness to start the year. Now, looking forward, I expect we're probably going to see a lot of things fairly similar to what we've seen up to this point. We're going to have a lot of volatility. We're going to be headline driven. So we're going to have certain news events that will come out that the market will probably react violently to in the short term. Some of those headlines I don't think will have long-term impacts. It's kind of like the conflict in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia. It most certainly isn't a positive thing, but it's a lot more negative to the human catastrophe that's going on than it is necessarily to the financial markets. Although, as I've been saying on Glass's show, Europe will be hit much harder because they have a lot more dependency through raw materials, oil, gas, commodities from Russia than we do here in the United States. But anytime a news event will come out, positive or negative in regards to that particular conflict, the market is probably going to react swiftly in the very short term and then adjust based on the fact that it may not have a true effect on very many companies' revenue or earnings per share in that. So, yeah, I think we can still squeak out a positive year. We've been saying from the beginning of the year, before we started out with 2 negative months, that we thought this year was going to be a positive year. We did begin to have some concerns that the headwinds that are known about may begin to have a greater impact as we head into 2023. And I would say we still feel that way, but obviously things have changed a little bit given the first 2 months of the year being negative. Of course, when we first started making that call, while people had the assumption that Putin may pull something with Ukraine, it hadn't happened yet. Nothing was a given until it actually happens. And obviously that has heightened the uncertainty within the market. And that's one of the things that the market dislikes the most, is uncertainty. Sometimes even if the news is bad, but it removes the uncertainty, the market will react better to knowing what the bad news is versus sitting in limbo of that uncertainty of, could this be much worse or could it be slightly better? You just don't know, and the market doesn't like that uncertainty position that it sometimes gets put in.
Yeah, and I also think when you look at last week, you know, a lot of economists, people, market mover trackers, whatever, speculated that the whole conflict would actually shave economic growth in the short run as things kind of worsen, supply chains and inflationary pressures, things like that. But so far, hasn't really been seen in the labor market for sure. I saw jobless claims fell and folks on state unemployment rolls fell and job openings are at record high. So over 11 million people, they're asking for help. Come on, we need your help. Hey, Rod, let's talk about, well, that right there is all good, but your point to, I want to emphasize, is that sometimes bad news actually turns out to be good news because it clears up the fog just a little bit. Even though it wasn't great, it's like, okay, well, at least now we know what we're dealing with. All right, so the math of recovery. So I mentioned things fall, seem like quickly, it takes a long time to get back. Just real quick, if you drop 20% on something, you have to get 25% back just to get back to even. And so when you drop 10% in a sector, it takes a bit to get back. So when you see gains of 1, 2, 3%, remember, we have to get more back than what we lost percentage-wise to even get back to even. So be patient. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep shoving money in those 401ks and those IRAs. Keep doing Roth conversions when it makes sense. You know, just keep segmenting your investments. And I'm going to talk later in the program about how you get ready to get ready when it comes to retirement. I had a few nervous conversations with people who are like 60, 61. And even though the market turned down early in the year, it really wasn't that bad compared to historical things. In fact, this may be the first quarter in a while that folks have seen a negative statement. And if we have another negative quarter, that means it's the first time in 10 years since 15 that we've seen two back-to-back negative quarters. So it's pretty common to see this. We tried to preach that through our show. We tried to preach it through videos we put out. Just, this is normal stuff. We just experienced such low volatility for so long that really a little bit of volatility is quite honestly a little bit of a good thing, especially if you're on top of things. Real quick, Rod. So let's talk about the interest rate curve. Now, the interest rate curve, folks, is you basically look at the Treasury rates and say, okay, I have 2-year, 5-year, 10-year, 20-year, 30-year, and you just kind of plot it, like connect the dots. And what you like to see is a good, nice curve upward where it starts off low and slopes up high. That's a good, healthy yield curve. That means long-term, we expect good growth. We have long-term, moderate inflation. We have low interest rates now, which tends to spur economic growth. Well, what's happened is the Fed's come in and start cranking the wheel, right? And as that wheel started to crank those short-term rates up, we've been causing occasional inversion, which means the short-term rates are higher than the long-term rates. Well, that typically indicates, it has in the past many, many times before, not always, but many times before, that a recession is coming. You know, 9 months, 24 months later, no one really knows. But that is something that we look at as a potential indicator for a recession. And you and I had a pretty lengthy discussion about that on the whys and why nots that this would indicate a recession is coming. So I'll have you just talk briefly about that.
Yeah, sure. So far this week, the inversion happened on the 5 to 10. So the 5-year yield was slightly higher than the 10-year yield. That is not the actual numbers that most of the people who track that from the standpoint of seeing what the future may hold, where they're looking. They are typically looking at the 2s to 10s, or in some cases, our old friend Jeffrey Thought from Raymond James, he liked the 2s to 30s. Those have not inverted. Now, the 2s to 10s at one point earlier this morning was only 3 basis points away from inversion. So I don't know if maybe it has inverted at all throughout the day, but at least pre-market, it hadn't yet. But boy, it was extremely close to it. But yeah, it is something that more and more people have started who researchers who go back and dig into these numbers and look at them historically, and especially for some of the people who actually use them to help make their investment decisions as they move forward, they have started to come out and say, you know what, the bond market used to be a great indicator of what the future held, especially from a growth perspective or potential recession. And really in the last 10, 15, 20 years, it has not been as good of an indicator. And that was part of what you and I began to discuss is, interestingly, if you go back around that amount of time, say 15 years, 20 years, well, what happened around then? Well, it was the 08 financial crisis. It was brand new tools added to the Fed's tool chest they never had before, quantitative easing being it. They have always been able to adjust interest rates up and down. So, yeah, the new tool's in the bag, and the Fed being a buyer and now a seller, or at least allowing their bonds to roll off and not repurchase with the principal as it gets returned off of that, that's all brand new stuff. So that could be the impact as to why the bond market hasn't been as good of an indicator as to the future as what it used to be. And then I think secondarily, the other thing that I think that I've been trying to explain to people so they get a slightly better understanding of why the yield curve is flattening, whether it ends up inverting, and I'm talking the inversion on the long side, especially 2 to 30, is the fact that what the Fed is really effectively trying to do by increasing interest rates is slow down demand. If they are effective at slowing down demand, guess what? That slows down growth. Well, if long-term interest rates on bonds are supposed to be a reflection of what future growth is, it makes sense that they're not continuing to go up while the Fed raises. The Fed's impact is predominantly on the short end of the curve. Now, depending on what else is going in the economy, it most certainly will and can filter through to those longer-term rates. But right now you're in an environment in which, hey, the market is saying the Fed wants to reduce demand, which will reduce growth, which is not pushing up those long-term rates. It's keeping them where they're at or bringing them down a little bit. But on the short side of it, it most certainly is starting to go up. You're going to hear an enormous amount of talk about inversion and recession. And just no one understands, while it's something that should be paid attention to, it is not a definitive that because we have an inversion, we will automatically have a recession. Pay attention to those economic data, and the job numbers that you talked about are very good key indicators as to how things are going in our economy, because we're consumption driven. And if people have jobs and are collecting a paycheck every 2 weeks, they're probably going to be out there consuming with those paychecks.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just reading an article today about Las Vegas visitors roll in with price increases, and how these numbers have jumped, and the price of rooms have nearly doubled, the price to get out there has doubled, the price of many of the food items. They talk about a hot dog stand, how it's now nearly twice as expensive, and people are still doing it. They just have so much pent-up demand. I loved your explanation of the inverted yield curve, because I remember, and this is basically, we're just hedging, saying, listen, it could happen, but it doesn't always have to happen. So if it happens, we can say, well, hey, we told you it could happen. If it doesn't happen, we're like, hey, we told you it didn't always happen. It's a good way of always being right. I use those tools on my wife sometimes. She doesn't really like it. Rod, I'm going to let you go, but I appreciate you as always, and we'll look forward to hearing you on Glass in the Afternoon. Big Show Friday coming up tomorrow.
That sounds good, David. Have a great show.
All right, man. See you back at the ranch. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, this volatility has people thinking, I'm going to retire soon. Am I in the right things? That's a great question to ask yourself, and I'm going to help you answer it when I come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, this segment was really spurred out of a real-life phone call. So I have been doing the Taxes in Retirement, What You Need to Know to Win workshops over at Ivy Tech. Did a few at the Legacy on South College as well. And out of that, people will turn in their sheets that say, hey, I would like to have a short conversation with someone. Well, I actually wanted to handle as many of those as I could personally, which has been somewhat challenging, but I've been able to get it done, and I've enjoyed the heck out of it. I enjoy nothing more than talking to real people about real situations. So I'm on the phone with this gentleman. He worked at a factory here in Bloomington. And he said, you know, I'm 60, and I'm single, and I'm just tired of doing what I'm doing. I think I want to retire. But, man, my 401k is just getting killed. And I'm like, maybe I shouldn't retire. Maybe I should hang in there longer and not work and work longer to let this thing recover. What do you think? I'm like, well, let me ask you this. How much do you have in your 401k? He told me. Well, what was it worth before? He told me. I'm like, how much money do you make? He told me. Well, literally the decline in value was 50% of what his income is for the entire year. So I understand. I mean, when you start putting it in perspective like that, I've always said, everyone's risk tolerance is slightly different, but when you take a brother's paycheck away and say, okay, hey, How much did you lose? I lost 100 grand. How much do you make? 100 grand. Wow, that's a big deal. I always said that's the breaking point. When you actually lose as much as you were going to make all year, that's that historic knowledge of my 28 years of doing this, thousands of meetings, I'm just telling you, that seems to be a breaking point for people. But he's halfway there. So I'm like, okay, well, here's what we need to do. We need to really take a good look at what the major risk here are. And a major risk is retiring into a bad market. We call that sequence risk, withdrawal rate risk. I have a great piece in my book, 2025, The Final Drive, that lays out sequence risk, what it is, how to manage it. And one example is real life example. We went back and we said, what if you retired in 1980? What if you retired in 1990? And what if you retired in 2000? And we show a $1 million portfolio as the example. We show a mix of 60% stocks, 30% bonds, 10% cash, and we say we're going to take 5% out every year. Well, in 1980, if you started with $1 million, took 5% out, you actually ended the 10-year period with about $1.4 million. Yeah, I guess it worked pretty good. If you did it in 1990, you ended up with over $2 million left. So you've taken money out and it grew. In 2000, you ran out of money 7 years in. Why did you run out of money? Well, because 1980 to 1990, yeah, we kind of got off to a pretty decent start. Are we off to 1 year bad start? Good years, one bad year, boom, then we took off. That was even during, you know, the whole October of 1987 thing. But anyway, it still worked out fine. 1990, the roaring 90s, that explains it. But 2000, you know, we lose money the first 3 years in a row, and I'm taking money out. Well, that's how you move yourself to zero pretty quickly, and that's called sequence risk. So I always tell folks, when you're about 5 years out from retirement, it's time to get ready to get ready. And what I mean by that, you need to start building your bridge, your funnels, your buckets, whatever you want to call it, to get yourself into a position where the money you're invested in long-term, which is your stock money, always has time horizon. So if I'm 60, and this comes back to my discussion with my new friend, and I'm like, okay, well, you're going to retire maybe next year. We finally talked about it, and I think he's probably going to wait till 63 and a half because of COBRA and health insurance and other issues. But nonetheless, I'm like, all right, it's time to really start thinking about building this first leg of income. The first leg of income should be your first 10 years or so in retirement. Now, he's still maybe 3 years away from that, so maybe we talk about 7 years. Well, most plans allow, and if you look at your investments in your plan, it's unlikely that you have a true place to go where you can just put it in a nice safe spot, because bonds, they're getting slaughtered, right? Stocks, we're getting hammered. There's probably not the most ideal place. So almost every plan out there has something called an age-based in-service distribution option. So most of you have a plan that at age 59 and a half, you can roll money out of your 401k, 403b into an IRA. And still working, still putting money in my plan, all that, to help you get ready to get ready. Start building your buckets or funnels. And that's a very common thing to do. I would still leave my later money in my 401k, you know, keep it invested in those growth funds. But all the money that comes out early, we want that to be our bridge money, our safe money, our money to get us over the hump to create that 10-year time horizon, which we believe if you give us 10 years in the market, more than the majority, almost all the time, you're going to have a positive outcome. So that's what you do. That's one idea to get money out of your IRA into the 401k. So we had a discussion. He ended up being almost 100% stock. So we just talked about that and said, let's just come up with a non-emotional point in time to say when this happens, then when you're going to pull the trigger and do the in-service. So we talked about it a little bit, and we came up with some numbers. When your 401k hits this, now, is it going to hit it? There's no assurance or no guarantees, right? We believe that the market will do okay this year, not maybe great, but okay. But we made a kind of a line in the sand, so, okay, this is the decision amount, and when this happens, here's the amount that should be rolled into an IRA, and then we discussed, which I'm going to in the next segment, what is that? Where do you put that money to be in a nice, secure, safe spot, okay? So that's called an age-based in-service distribution. It's available with TSP. It's available with all major corporations around. It's available with school system. Not available at Indiana University. But it's available in most plans, an age-based in-service distribution. Be very careful, because when you do it, you want help. Because if you screw it up, it may end up in the wrong account. It might end, you might have Roth money in your 401k. That may need to be handled a little bit differently. You might have company stock in your 401k. That needs to be handled differently. Or maybe that could dictate whether or not you do it at all. So I'm actually going to do a podcast this week on if you own company stock in your 401k, how do you handle that in the tax-correct way? And I've seen it done very, very effectively, and I've seen it extremely messed up, and I've seen everything in between. So that'll be my podcast number 11 this week. I'm going to record it this evening on Thursday evening, and then we'll play it on Monday when the Taxes and Retirement, the 2025 Final Drive podcast comes out. All right, so what about folks that retire early? I used to talk about this a lot, and now I'm 52 years old, and I'm looking at this thinking, rule of 55, what's that? Well, you're always about, okay, when I have to wait until I'm 59 and a half to take money out of my IRAs and retirement accounts to not be penalized. No, not always. But here's one that you need to know about. Let's say that you are 56, 7, or 8, and you're like, hey, I'm gonna retire. I'm going to do something different, whatever. I'm going to need some access to this retirement account. Don't roll it to an IRA, or at least a poor proportion that you might need. Leave that part in the 401k, 403b. Why? Because the rule is if you terminate in the year or after that you turn 55, you can access those funds with no penalty. If you roll it to an IRA, you have to be 59 and a half to take the money out, unless you do substantial equal payments, 72 Ts, all those crazy things that can get people in trouble as well. So rule of 55, something people definitely need to know. Other ages that I think are important, 62, 65, 66 or 67, 70 and a half, and now 72. These are all important ages to understand and when you're planning out retirement, especially when you're getting ready to get ready. So first is in-service options at 59 and a half. Second was rule of 55, that you can get money out of a plan before age 59 and a half without a penalty. 62, that's when you're first eligible for Social Security. 65, that's when you're Medicare eligible. Between 66 and 67, that's when Social Security full retirement age happens. Age 70, that's the maximum benefit for Social Security. That's the longest you can delay and get those delay credits up to age 70. 70 and a half, that's when you become eligible to do qualified charitable distributions from your IRAs. And those cannot come from a 401k, so you have to have it in an IRA. Most of the time, once you get past that 59 and a half age, or you retire, it makes sense to roll it to an IRA because then you get to the age of 72 when you have required minimum distributions. And if you have money all over the place in 401ks and IRAs, it gets very complicated. If you have it all in IRAs, and it can be in 20 IRAs or one, it doesn't matter, you can add up all your IRAs as one, and then you calculate your minimum distribution, and you can take it from whichever account you want. And that's the way you do the bucket planning for RMDs. So you might say, well, I don't need any money for my retirement account. Do I really need to do this bucket or funnels? Yes, because at some point you have to take it out, and they make you take it in cash. You can't take it in securities like you do a Roth conversion. It must come in cash. So yes, create a bucket plan to handle your RMDs. That money should be in an account that's good, safe, and secure, ready for distributions without worry of what the market is doing. There's nothing more frustrating than calculating your required minimum distribution based on a December 31st value, and then the market drops 20%, and you're forced to take out money based on that year-end value, selling things at a loss. Even if you quickly get it reinvested on the other side, you still had to pay taxes and all that. So you want to be very, very strategic about how you handle your required minimum distributions, and that's 72. So go back to 55, that's important. 59 and a half, that's important for in-service distribution. 62, 65, full retirement age. Maximum retirement age for Social Security, age 70, as far as benefits go. 70 and a half, giving money for my IRAs tax-free to my favorite church and charities. And now 72, which is the ultimate age where it all starts to come together, and that is your required distribution age. All right, let's take a break. When I come back, what should be in that soon bucket? You know, what are some ideas that you could put together to give you a good solid place so you don't have to worry about the market destroying your plans, which it can happen if you're not careful. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. I need to start listening to Prager here on GCL. Why? Because he talks really slow, and I talk really fast. So if I could somehow adopt a in-between model where I talk at a reasonable pace like I'm trying to now, everyone would comprehend things better. When I got finished with this last segment, I was out of breath, and I thought, I need to settle down. Is it because I get so excited about things? I don't know about that. What I'm thinking is I had so much to talk about, and I only have a limited amount of time. I wanted to try to get it all out and get it in quick. But here's the thing. I always do a call to action on my podcast, and that's it. Hey, these are complicated issues, and if you want to talk about them, please give us a call. Email us, cfci.us. Give us a call over at the office, and we'll make it happen. We'll get you on the phone for 10 or 15 minutes with an advisor to kind of talk through what's going on with you and what's happening in your world. If something's going on, it's no obligation. Just call. We'll hook you up. It'll be great. And then if it makes sense for you to come in to see someone, then it makes sense. If it doesn't, then, you know, you're able to get some great information, and we part friends, and everything's awesome for you and your family and your situation. So that's our approach with this opportunity for people to reach out. You know, it's a lot of fun. Maybe a Zoom. I love doing Zooms with people because they've heard my voice for so long. And if they haven't met me in person, we get to see each other, and it's just fun. It's fun for me. And again, I have a hard time accommodating those personally all the time, but I do enjoy them when I get the chance. All right, so you've heard me talk about segmenting your money, right, based on purpose and use. So if my purpose is that I'm going to need some of this money, or I'm being forced to take some of this money soon, I want that money to be in a safe, secure spot or a place that has more safety than the stock market. I don't want to be a forced seller. So my opinion is you should have 10 years of that money, because we've been through bad 3- and 5-year periods. We've been through not great 10-year periods, but it rarely happens. Most of the time, almost all the time, a 10-year period, if you're given that in the stock market, you're going to be okay. So that's why I focus on 10 years. I think you can, for more conservative people, sure, you can get yourself a 12- or 15-year bridge or bucket, and that's okay if you have enough money and you're comfortable with that. But what are some things that I've used in the past that I'm a big proponent of? Well, one, in the past, and I think it's going to become more popular with interest rates coming up, is a laddered bond portfolio. What does that mean? Well, I buy a bond. Let's say I'm going to need $30,000. I buy a bond for $30,000, and it matures in 2023. And I buy another one, matures in 2024, and then 5, and then 6, and 7, all the way out 10 years. And that's called a laddered bond portfolio. I have a fixed interest rate, a fixed maturity date, and a fixed face amount. And they're issued by corporations, generally speaking, especially in IRAs. You could have municipal bonds issued by municipalities that may be tax-free. And they just kind of mature off. You get interest paid in your account, and you know, you kind of ladder that out for 10 years. It's a nice way to give you some assurance. Of course, you're basing the repayment on the faith and credit of that company, so you want to buy good quality bonds, even if you're giving up a little interest rate to buy the highest of quality. What about fixed annuities? You know, fixed annuities are like CDs to a bank, but it's with an insurance company. You know, most of the time, you can get a 10% free withdrawal out. You might buy a 10-year fixed annuity, get a decent rate on it. I've seen some rates come through lately that are in the low threes, completely backed and guaranteed by the insurance company. Just kind of take your 10% out each year. That's your money, and you don't have to worry about what's happening in the stock market. You have fixed index annuities. The interest rate isn't fixed. It's indexed to the stock market. If the market's up, you get an interest in a credit. Usually it's higher than what you would get in a fixed annuity. If the market's down, you just stay flat. Again, 10% free withdrawals. That's a good cost-free, because there's no cost associated with those. With a laddered bond, you're likely to have to pay some kind of a cost to buy it or someone to manage the credits for you. And both are fine, just depending on what you like. The laddered bond, completely liquid. You can buy them all today, sell them all tomorrow. Fixed and fixed indexed annuities, you're going to go in with somewhat of a commitment. You can get 10% out each year with no penalty, but then after that, you may have a penalty if you take out more than 10%. So the other things we like are buffered notes. You put something into an investment that if the market is flat or up, you get a fixed interest rate. That's kind of like a fixed index. But if the market's down 10%, you don't lose anything. If it's down 15, you might lose 5. So there's some risk on the downside, but you get a lot more opportunity on the upside. And then the last thing that we've used a lot lately are called buffer notes. And a buffer note is a buffer exchange traded fund. I had Rod explain this a little bit a few months ago. But new money coming in, you want to have a chance, fighting chance to make some decent money. You want a fighting chance to protect what you have. So you buy these buffer ETFs. So the cap might be 7, 8, 9, 10% on the S&P for the year. But the buffer is the first 5% you take, the next 25% of any loss. The market is washed out. It takes it. But you can buy ones in the past. So if you go back and look at a January note, it may have already busted through that 5% barrier. Now you're into the complete protected zone for the next 25%, and your cap might be 12. So again, that's something that's hard to do on your own. But Rod keeps a big spreadsheet of the different buffers each month, what their caps were, what the, you know, where we are on things. And when new money comes in, he'll say, okay, where do we buy the new one? Do we buy one of the old ones? A month ago, he's buying the October one. So that's kind of a cool way to handle risk, handle management of that soon bucket as well. All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, man, I got a lot to talk about in a little bit of time, so I'm going to cram it all in. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, something I wanted to talk about, I'm not going to have much time, but I did some education on the Heritage Club with the Boys and Girls Club. I'm a board member at the Boys and Girls Club. I'm the chairman of the Investment and Endowment Committee, and we are trying to get people to essentially put the Boys and Girls Club in their estate plan in some way or fashion. So I did an educational program on how to do this. What are the different types of assets that people own? What kind of things should you give away while you're living? What should you give away when you die? And a good slide presentation on that. And I'm just going to say, rather than me talk about it on today's program, I'm just going to offer up the slide deck. So if you want to have a copy of my slides, many of you attended the workshops virtually and also in person. But if you'd like to have those, just email us over at cfci.us. Just contact us. Tell us you want the slide deck for the charitable giving program that I did. It's really good, and it basically tells you here's what you should do while you're living. Give away this asset, and then when you pass away, these assets should go to your kids, grandkids, family, whatever, your wife. This money should go to charity. Of course, the taxable money goes to the charity, right? Tax-free money goes to the family. You don't want tax-free money going to the charity. That's stupid. You want your taxable money, IRAs, 401ks, things that never have had the taxes paid. That way, no one pays it. You didn't pay it, your family didn't pay it, the charity doesn't pay it. So a great program, I was told, on that topic. So if you'd like the deck slide, please let me know, and we will get that to you. And then if you want a little explanation or would like for me to do it for your group, I think it was well received. All right, let's take another quick break, come back. I'll wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you enjoyed today's program. If you missed any of it, catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., always on WGCLradio.com. And then obviously, once that happens, it's on your favorite place to listen to podcasts. Of course, mine is iTunes, but I know it's all over the place. I don't know all the different sources. I don't know how it even gets there, but it gets there magically. I know a lot of people listen. I hope you continue to listen and continue to enjoy the new podcast 2025. The Final Drive will be recording episode number 11 on if you own stock in your company plan, company stock in your company plan, how to handle it in the correct tax way. That's coming up this Monday night. Have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.